Here we are again, August 26th, Sue Hall and Tristan McDonald are getting deeper and deeper into this wonderful way of thinking and learning identified by the word dyslexia. This podcast, in the Talk the Dys Out of Dyslexia series, hosted by the Whole Dyslexic Society, focuses on Julie Brewer's experience as the mother of a dyslexic and a Montessori preschool class teacher.
Okay, today we have Julie and Cohen joining us from Victoria, and of course Tristan is here, and the easiest thing to do, Julie, is just to ask you to introduce yourself, please. How did you get into all this? How did we meet?
Sure, it was about a year and a month ago that I came upon your book, Fish Don't Climb Trees, on my Goodreads on my Kindle. It just happened to come up for a suggestion. I had been looking for reading on different learning abilities and disabilities, and it was suggested to me, and I was drawn to the cover of it, and I clicked on it and I started reading it, and within two chapters I started reading it to Cohen. We were on the beach in spring break and we were sitting there reading your book, and he just said yes to everything and just loved everything about it. And I think I emailed you that day.
That's fantastic.
Let's do this. I want the program. We need to try this. It sounds like it's exactly what our lives need. And awesome. It was a month and a half later, I think, that you came to our city and we started this program for Cohen, the Week Davis program. And it just absolutely changed our lives.
So Cohen, as part of the changed life, what did you think about it? Did you think it was strange when we first started?
Yeah.
Oh dear. But you'd had a bit of a tough time at school, right?
Yeah.
A little bit? Yeah. And we had fun. It was a good week, wasn't it? But the thing that I was very interested in, you had started a vision therapy program, hadn't you? And you came, you did your program close to the end of that other program, right?
He had graduated the program, but had gone back again because they were still not seeing him being where they wanted him to be.
Gotcha.
And they couldn't get him to advance in any of the activities anymore. We'd kind of hit a brick wall, and it was just so frustrating for him.
Right.
After the 1 week Davis training program, we went back to them and they did the exact same activities and tests, and he just flew through them all, easy peasy. We were all in tears because it was amazing.
Oh, that was so cool. Well done, Cohen. And I know that the vision therapist was interested in what we've been doing. So that was a very cool part of it too, right?
Yeah, to spread the word to more people, just trying to get them interested in the Davis program to help more kids. And
very smart, very smart. And Cohen, you're working through the follow-up now, is that right? You're reading with Mom and you're doing the clay words?
Yeah.
How is the homeschooling going? Because this is recorded in COVID time, so Mom is now also your homeschooler, right?
Mm-hmm.
You enjoy the homeschooling?
Yeah.
What when you do homeschooling online, how difficult is it in terms of the whole reading thing? Is it worse when you have to read off the screen, or is it better? Or
tell me what you use.
It's a little better when the read and write program works, and it helps me write and read, and has a dictionary picture.
Is it like a speech to text thing, so you can talk into it and it'll read it back to you, is that it?
Yes, and it's got a bunch of other features.
Oh, cool.
It even has a visual dictionary.
Whoa, that's pretty smart. Does it have the trigger words?
Any word that you highlight in the text that you're reading, you can highlight a word you don't know, and instead of giving you a dictionary definition where it's words, it'll give you an illustrated definition.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. So have you clicked on the... Is there an illustrated...
Did you try the?
No, I haven't tried that yet.
Oh, I'm interested to know. Obviously, I'm interested in the trigger words, those little words that don't normally have picture meanings.
If there's a word that doesn't have a meaning, it'll it'll sometimes just say not available.
Okay. I would imagine
that the would, I think that the Davis program should create an illustrated dictionary.
Do you know, that's exactly what we, but funnily enough, we had that thought about 2 days ago.
Yeah.
And so, Cohen, how do you feel about this whole dyslexia thing right now? And then we'll let you disappear. Are you still happy you have this way of thinking?
Yes.
Very yes. Good. Okay. That's
very
awesome.
Interesting.
It is interesting, isn't it?
I had asked him before we started here, I'd asked him what his favorite part of the Davis program was. Do you remember what it was?
Learning how to focus.
Focus piece was really what he needed the most. I mean, he loves the clay and he loves learning the reading, spell reading, and that is great too. But the biggest benefit for him has been learning how to focus. And it has shone in every area of his life. Sports and at home and at school, and just being able to say, are you focused?
Yeah.
Find your focus. He's gained control.
That's fantastic. That's so cool. And the thing is, when people at school before, they would have said to you, come concentrate, pay attention, focus, but nobody would ever have said how. Mm-hmm. Because there's no awareness of the fact that actually people have to be shown how to focus.
Well, it's funny that too, because you could probably say that to other people that keep telling you, oh, focus, but then you ask them, well, how? And they kind of think about it for a minute. Oh, yeah, I don't really know. I just do it.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Well, with most cans, it's concentration, right? You sort of just pull yourself in, but it's exhausting, especially exhausting if you have this way of thinking. I can see you nodding your head there, Cohen. Oh, dear. Well, I'm glad. I'm very happy for you. That is very cool. So then, Julie, after you've seen what was happening, you must tell everybody what your career is, what you do.
Great. Yeah, I am a Montessori preschool teacher, and I've been doing that. We just did the math. I've been doing that for 17 years.
Wow.
And the last, it was October when I took the DLS training. So since then, I started implementing the learning strategies into my classroom of 3 to 5 year olds. And we started with focus, and the kids just absolutely love it. They crave it. They ask to do koosh, and we do little charades games where we act out the dial, the levels of the dial, and they just love that. And they love the visualization of how to find your focus.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And these are 3-year-olds, and I catch them doing it spontaneously while they're working with something, a puzzle or fitting shapes into the box, you know, the just simple activities. Yeah. And as soon as they feel frustration, you can just see them, they decompress and they find their focus and then they try again. And I don't even have to say anything half the time.
The parents must be thrilled. Do they keep this going at home?
What's interesting is that I don't think they have, even though I have tried to tell them what we're doing. It's a kind of an abstract concept for the parents to wrap their heads around. And now that I'm closed now, my program closed with the, I had parents texting me saying, my child's asking to do clay. What does that mean? And so I said, they're still craving it. They're at home and they're craving it. So I've started to do a little bit more suggestions on things that they should do with them and said, to say, find your focus, like those words in particular, what they're used to hearing. So find your focus, and when we're going to master the letters. They started doing it with Play-Doh at home and sending me pictures of the letters that they've made with Play-Doh.
That's so cool.
And they're not all into it. You can see some kids are not drawn to this at this age, and other kids just crave it every day. Can I do clay? Every day. If I lay it out on the tables, there's always the same kids that go right to it. And then the other kids, they love it if I ask them to come work with me, but they're not intuitively drawn to it.
Well, it's interesting because, I mean, you said DLS, and I should probably explain that we've been talking about the methods that we use for correction. We've been talking about the tools that we hand over and how the reading exercises go and the alphabet mastery and, how you can create images for the words that don't normally have images. That's the part of the correction program. But the methods that you're talking about were developed so that a classroom teacher could use these methods for the whole class and they would reach the little Apple Macs, and they would reach the little PC computers. They would reach both types of learning and basically prevent the challenges from happening. That's the whole idea, because, you know, I think it's interesting what you say, because possibly the children who crave it, maybe they're the little Apple Macs, the ones who have this gift of dyslexia, right? Mm-hmm. And maybe, you know, the others are okay with it. But it's interesting. It would be very cool to keep a note of those children. And if you were able to follow them through their schooling and find out if they ever were sort of earmarked as having a learning challenge. But the chances are, now you've done this, they won't. Touch wood.
It's true, yeah, it's a possibility. And the reason I started doing the Davis Learning Strategies is because of two particular children in my program, uh-huh, who I kind of self-pinpointed as being possible dyslexics, or at least very visual learners. And I wasn't able to reach them the same as I was with the rest of the class. And with my experience with Cohen and his Davis program, I knew there was something out there that could reach them. So I decided to try this. And within 2 weeks, I saw a difference with those two children. It was amazing and just so comforting to know that I was able to give them something that they weren't getting otherwise.
That's so cool. Did they seem more confident in themselves?
Absolutely. They no longer shied away from picking up a pencil or doing any letter language activity. And even one of the parents had their son in a Kumon program, thinking that would help after school. And the Kumon teacher noticed the difference.
Wow.
Within 2 weeks with his printing. They said, "What are you doing? All of a sudden his printing is amazing." It was the clay. He was building his name with the clay.
Yeah, brilliant. That is so very cool. And I think you mentioned that sometimes they're out in the playground and they remind each other. Is that it?
Yes, all day long they'll say, "Check your dial," to a friend who might be running across the classroom. I'll hear a three-year-old say, "Check your dial." We didn't get to the clay models. I was hopeful that we would have by now, but I had to close at kind of a very pivotal time. And then I had just had a handful of them complete their letters, the alphabet in lowercase. So we were there, we were ready, and then we ran out of time.
Yeah.
So I guess next year I'll try it again with a new group of kids. But they did encourage each other to do the letters. I had big pizza boxes, and I had a checklist. When they finished a letter and mastered it, they checked it off and put it in their pizza box. And they would often say, "What letter are you on?" Or, "Where did this letter?" So that was, it was motivating to them, to their peers. They motivated each other.
That is
nice to find motivation that's not coming from the teacher, right?
Exactly, exactly. And it's interesting is that the strategies that you talk about, people designed them for kindergarten to grade 3. And I don't know of anybody else having used them for preschool, right?
Mm-hmm. I think a big difference is the Montessori program. Is the preschool program is really like kindergarten program.
Gotcha.
The work that we're teaching is on par with what a typical kindergarten would do, not a Montessori kindergarten.
Gotcha.
So that it's just giving them that opportunity to do more if they want to. We don't force it, of course. No. We don't force any child to do anything they're not ready for. But just providing the opportunities earlier when they're more sensitive to learning it.
Yeah, absolutely. And the whole point of this is that not only can you stop the challenges happening, I mean, they only happen because our way of thinking isn't catered for in the regular system, right? But it avoids that testing thing. I mean, the children, you know, a lot of people think early intervention is the answer, right? Don't they? They think that if you test the children early enough and then give them more of what they couldn't do in the beginning, that's the way to go. But to me, it just seems so simple that if you actually give them what they need from day one, then there's never going to be the need to test them or pull them out of class or give them extra help and have tutoring. And you know, really, they do find that they are convinced that they cannot learn the same as everybody else.
I think the biggest part for us with Cohen and with my class is the focus and the couche and being able to recognize when they're not actually able to learn something.
Yeah. if they're able to recognize it, then basically they're managing themselves, mm-hmm. and other people don't have to manage them. I think that's the most important part.
Exactly. And they keep each other in check, too. I'll often hear the little kids say, I'm focused right now. Can you please wait? Or I will say to them something like, can you see how she's really focused? Let's not interrupt yet. And let's wait. So there's another piece to it, too, is just creating that they're not so self-centered around their learning. They're creating good workspaces for their whole peer group as well.
It's amazing. Just amazing.
Just a whole bunch of teamwork and honesty, really. And it sounds like the students are having not only honesty with themselves, but with everybody else there.
Exactly, yeah. And they love it. Yeah.
Don't you wish you had that when you were growing up, Tristan?
I do too. And I think I have a little bit of dyscalculia. And I feel like this would have been really good for me during my math classes. Mm-hmm. I was always checked out of math. If I had had my focus and been able to use clay to understand, because it was an abstract concept, that I think it would have been really helpful for me too. Oh,
me too. I know I have difficulty with math big time.
Oh yeah.
We're all in the same. That's fantastic. Thank you so much. I really appreciate that.
Every school should have their teachers attend just an information workshop on this, because dyslexia on its own is not recognized in our school district as a learning disability on its own.
Really?
It's not. If Cohen didn't get a diagnosis of ADHD along with his dyslexia, he wouldn't have gotten an IEP, and he wouldn't have gotten any scripted accommodations for his learning, unless I came to them and said, he needs this. And a lot of parents don't understand that they need to educate themselves on it and advocate, because the school system is letting these kids fall through the cracks.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
Do you know why it isn't viewed as a disability with the school? Do you know why they're not attending to it?
I don't understand it. It's baffling, because it is such a huge learning disability, or teaching disability, however you want to see it. Yeah. I don't know the reason for it. I wish I did. There must be a route somewhere that we could get to, and I feel like we need to infiltrate Sue into the school district.
Yeah. I don't know that.
Send the Sue.
Excuse me. The trouble is, they won't listen to me because I don't have a degree.
Isn't that baffling?
I mean, I've tried that. You know, this is one of my favorite chapters in my book, where I went to see an educational psychology professor, and I was hoping to get some research organized with her. And the first question I had was, what are your qualifications, dear? And I didn't go to university. Well, guess why, right? Because I had this funny feeling that it wasn't for me. But that was the end of the conversation. I sort of understand. I know that, you know, the academic system is built on research and it's built on studies. And, you know, if you're putting something out to a whole system, I understand it has to be something that is really going to work and plausible. But I do think that it would be a good idea to listen to people who really have this way of thinking, rather than read about people who have this way of thinking. Do you know what I mean?
It was something that Cohen said when I first asked him today, how he felt when he first started the Davis program with you in particular, his week. And he said, I loved her dogs. And I love how she made me feel comfortable being me. So because you lived it and you have the experience with being dyslexic and having a dyslexic son, really, you made him feel like it's okay to be him however he comes, and that you didn't expect him to change in any way to get this work done. And that was the first time, I think, in his educational life that he ever felt like that. Oh. He ever felt accepted for who he was. And that hasn't stopped. He still feels that way now, knowing that he has these tools and that it's okay and he can be successful being who he is. It's priceless.
Oh, that's so good to hear. And that is exactly what happens in school, because the current methods are pushing you down to that sound end of the continuum, right? And the people who are the very visual and kinesthetic end of the continuum, they're not going to budge. I mean, that's just who they are. And they can do everything that everybody else can do, as long as they can do it their way, right?
Yeah.
So it is important to know that we do not have to change. and we do not have anything wrong with us, and our brain is perfectly well wired.
Mm-hmm. It's so funny for the education system to not be open to something like this. Like, that's the whole thing about education, is though there are some set things that do work, you're always supposed to be open to learn, right? And then they have this enclosed box in which they expect basically everyone to fit in. But when you have somebody like me or Sue or Cohen who think these ways, you can't mold these people to fit like that, because the brain just cannot work that way. Well, the dyslexic brain.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, we're out of the box thinkers.
Yeah.
In fact, we don't really know what the box looks like.
Well, we make it. We make our own box.
No.
No, I know it.
But that's so important. I'm glad Cohen feels like that. That was very good. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. When you asked him about the COVID homeschooling, he's not a deep talker, but he is thriving in the digital world because it's visual and he can just talk. He doesn't have to type. He doesn't have to print. He doesn't have to hold a pencil if he doesn't want to.
Right.
We've given him the tools, and we've learned many, many different apps and extensions and websites and tools that he can learn to express himself better, and it's slowly getting easier for him. So lucky to have the technology at his fingertips, because he will be successful now. I don't know where he would be without text to speech and speech to text and read and write and Grammarly. We call Grammarly mom number one and I'm mom number two. So Grammarly will check it first, and then he can get me to check it for second. So he'll often say, mom number one's confused. Can mom number two come and check on this? Because he knows that it's not right, but he doesn't know how to correct it himself. He's just so lucky to have these tools. I'm so grateful.
No, that's amazing. I didn't realize that. I do know with my son that I had said all through his schooling, spelling does matter. Just, you know, it's not a huge deal, but it does matter. And he said, no, they don't say that at school. It doesn't really matter. So I used to go into school and I would say, could you have a word with him, please, and tell him it's not the end of the world, but it is a difference between a good application that is spelled correctly, if you like, for something, and maybe an application that's not spelled so well. And the teachers would say, he's got such a wonderful imagination. We don't want to tie him down with spelling and the grammar. And all that sort of thing. And every year I went in to say, please tell him spelling matters. And, you know, no, it's just fine. You let him go. He's got such a great imagination. And I remember that when he went to university, he discovered these applications that do help you with your grammar. And as long as it was telling him that it wasn't okay, he was fine. He didn't need a person to tell him. But he was quite happy with a non-emotional program that was telling him and underlining the things that he had to
learn. Yeah, that's a good point, the non-emotional part. It makes a big difference to the confidence that Cohen has. Yeah. If a person tells him to correct something versus a computer tells him to correct something, it really does make a difference.
Huge difference, especially a parent. I mean, that makes a difference even more, doesn't it?
Peer, like I've had it added to Cohen's IEP that his work is not to be graded by a peer. Because the peers are a little more judgmental, and that's not something he needs to add to his plate, right? Mm-hmm.
That's interesting. Is a lot of work graded by peers?
Not a lot, and not anything that's for big marks, but small things if they did like a quick pop quiz kind of thing, and it would be passed to the person on your right, and then quickly checked it out loud, and it just wasn't a good experience.
What you were just saying a minute ago reminded me when I was really little, we had to make a sentence that said, you know, something we don't like or whatever it was. And the teacher would read it out and some of the students would look at it and I put like, I hate milk or something silly. And I misspelled hate for some reason. And I put hat and I didn't know that. And then one of the students read it and said, who says I hat milk?
Oh.
So the whole classroom erupts with laughter. I'm going, uh-oh. Right. And the teacher says, you know, it's okay. You know, who was it that did this? It's all right. And it was funny because he pinpointed me out within the class and said, it's all right. But then now the entire class viewed me as, and I just felt so silly because I put hat. I was just missing an E. How could I miss the E? And I wouldn't want to write. So I can really relate with your son, just because it's daunting. And so when you have a computer and you have all these things that help you, and the computer that doesn't judge, Yeah. It's much more easy to just go, okay, I'm fine with just letting it go flowing yeah. on the computer.
Exactly. It's so true. Oh, that's interesting. No, we need to find the teachers who teach the teachers. And I think it's happening little by little because we were invited to UVic the year before last, and we were able to talk to some teachers there. So everybody we interview has a different view of dyslexia. You know, you have the parental view and you have the Montessori teacher view, and Tristan has the young adult view.
Actually, there was one other thing I wanted to say about the piece of it. I don't know if any Montessorians will be listening to the podcast, but if they are, it's something to be said for the sensorial learning that the Davis learning strategies incorporate into the program. It's right on par with the Montessori philosophy, is that you learn best through doing and using multiple senses to learn any concept. So when we do letters, numbers with them, we first introduce it with sandpaper. So they're tracing it, feeling it, hearing it, saying it all at the same time. So when we built it out of clay, I often saw kids go over and pick up those sandpaper letters and hold up their clay letter next to the sandpaper letter and see if they got it right. They were finding the connections within the classroom themselves. And it just fit seamlessly in with the Montessori curriculum that it was easy to do.
That's so valuable. Mm-hmm. It's quite amazing.
I think that we need to contact the lower elementary Montessori schools and get this in their ear, because it won't be a big stretch for any of their staff to incorporate it into their programs. And that's what we all need, because we all don't have enough time for the more things to add to the curriculum all the time. This is not a huge thing to do.
And it's not always adding, is it? I mean, it can sometimes just be replacing.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. There's another lady who's been using these strategies in a public school in Burnaby. She's a K-1 teacher, and she has been using them for quite some time. Her main message to people is, don't think it is something extra that you have to do. Just think that you have to teach them the alphabet anyway. It's just a different way of introducing it. The tools are obviously, the focusing tools are a little bit extra, but at the same time, if you teach the children to manage themselves, then you don't have to spend all that time on managing them.
Absolutely.
And I have to be honest, I've been into quite a few classrooms where I see a lot of management and not so much content. And I'm sure the teachers would be very grateful if the children were self-regulating, and then they could have more time to deal with the content.
Yeah, for sure.
Thank you, Julie. Thank you so very, very much for joining us. And thank you, Cohen. And
thanks for having me.
Good news, right? The challenges do not need to arise. And lucky for her students, they can all learn the way they were born to learn from day one. For more information on Davis learning strategies, go to www.davislearn.com or get in touch with us, info@thewds.org. There is a prevention page on our website. The next podcast is the last in this first series. In chapter 17 of my book, Fish Don't Climb Trees, I share a new paradigm which would bring about a cognitive equal opportunity for all children, regardless of learning style.